Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Gentex Reports Third Quarter 2016 Financial Results Conference Call. Today's call is being recorded, and I'd now like to turn the meeting over to Mr. Josh O'Berski with Gentex Investor Relations Manager. Please go ahead, sir.
Good morning, and welcome to the Gentex Corporation Third Quarter 2016 Earnings Release Conference Call. I'm Josh O'Berski, Gentex Investor Relations Manager, and I'm joined by Steve Downing, Senior Vice President and Chief Financial Officer, Kevin Nash, Vice President and Chief Accounting Officer, and Neil Boehm, Vice President of Engineering. This call is live on the internet by way of an icon on the Gentex website at www.gentex.com. All contents of this conference call are the property of Gentex Corporation and may not be copied, published, reproduced, rebroadcast, retransmitted, transcribed, or otherwise redistributed. Gentex Corporation will hold responsible and liable any party for any damages incurred by Gentex Corporation with respect to any unauthorized use of the contents of this conference call. This conference call contains forward-looking information within the meaning of the Gentex Safe Harbor statement included in the Gentex Reports Third Quarter 2016 Financial Results press release from earlier this morning, and as always, shown on the Gentex website. Your participation in this conference call implies consent to these terms. Now I'll turn the call over to Steve Downing, who will give the third quarter 2016 financial summary.
Thank you, Josh. For the third quarter of 2016, the company is pleased to report net sales of $429.6 million, which was an increase of 10% compared to net sales of $389.8 million in the third quarter of 2015. The 10% sales growth was driven by a 9% increase in auto-dimming mirror unit shipments, while overall automotive light vehicle production in the company's primary regions declined approximately 40 basis points for the third quarter of 2016 when compared with the same quarter in 2015. The gross profit margin in the third quarter of 2016 was 40.5%, compared with a gross profit margin of 39% in the third quarter of 2015. The increase in the gross profit margin was driven by purchasing cost reductions and favorable product mix, which more than offset annual customer price reductions. Income from operations for the third quarter of 2016 increased 15% to $134.2 million when compared to income from operations of $116.3 million for the third quarter of 2015, as a result of the improved gross profit margin and consistent financial discipline in the company's operating expense growth. Net income for the third quarter of 2016 increased 18% to $92.1 million, compared with net income of $78.3 million in the third quarter of 2015. Earnings per diluted share in the third quarter of 2016 increased 19% to $0.32, compared with earnings per diluted share of $0.27 in the third quarter of 2015. The increase was primarily driven by the increase in net income, but was aided by a lower diluted share count on a quarter-over-quarter basis as a result of the company continuing to execute a consistent capital allocation strategy. During the third quarter of 2016, the company repurchased 1.8 million shares of its common stock at an average price of $16.59 per share. As of September 30th, 2016, the company has approximately 9 million shares remaining available for repurchase, including the most recent authorization of 7.5 million shares by the company's board of directors. The company intends to continue to repurchase additional shares of its common stock in the future, depending on macroeconomic issues, market trends, and other factors that the company deems appropriate. During the third quarter of 2016, the company paid down $10 million on its revolver loan, in addition to its normally scheduled principal repayment on the company's term loan. The company may, at its discretion, pay additional principal towards its loans in the future, depending on macroeconomic trends, capital expenditure spending, cash and money market interest rates, the amount of free cash flow, and other factors that it deems appropriate for timing and amounts of incremental debt repayments. Now I'll turn the call over to Kevin Nash with some third quarter financial details.
Thanks, Steve. Automotive net sales in the third quarter of 2016 were $419.8 million, an increase of 11% compared with automotive net sales of $379.9 million in the third quarter of 2015. As noted previously, this increase was driven by a 9% increase in auto-dimming mirror unit shipments, in addition to favorable shifts in product mix. Other net sales in the third quarter of 2016, which includes dimmable aircraft windows and fire protection products, were $9.8 million, which was relatively consistent with other sales of $9.9 million in the third quarter of 2015. ER&D expenses increased 10%, and SG&A expenses increased 13% for the third quarter of 2016 to $23.6 million and $16 million, respectively. ER&D expenses increased primarily as a result of increased staffing to support new product launches. SG&A expenses increased primarily due to increased travel and marketing expenses, as well as increases in staffing. The tax rate during the third quarter was 31.5%, which varied from the statutory rate of 35%, primarily due to the domestic manufacturing deduction. Based on the company's forecast and current legislation, the company continues to expect its tax rate to be between 31.5% and 32.5% for calendar year 2016. For some balance sheet items, the balance sheet items represent a comparison versus December 31, 2015, which is also included in today's press release. Cash and cash equivalents, $534.5 million, down from $551.6 million as a result of short-term investment purchases, capital expenditures, accelerated debt repayments, and share repurchases, all of which were mostly offset by cash flow from operations during the 9 months ended. Short-term investments, $152.2 million, up from $4.5 million, and long-term investments, $57.5 million, down from $95.2 million at year-end, primarily due to changes in investment mix. Accounts receivable, $229.2 million, up from $196 million, primarily due to the timing of sales within each comparable period. Inventories, $179.4 million, up from $174.7 million, primarily due to increases in finished goods. Accrued liabilities, $85.5 million, up from $64.7 million, due to the timing of tax and certain wage payments. Some cash flow highlights. Cash flow from operations for the third quarter of 2016 increased to $99.6 million from $91.3 million in the third quarter of 2015, primarily due to increases in net income and changes in working capital. Year-to-date cash flow from operations increased to $353 million from $283.2 million through 9 months in 2015, also due to increases in net income and changes in working capital. CapEx for the third quarter was $34.5 million compared with $18.4 million in the third quarter of 2015, and year-to-date CapEx was $91.5 million compared with $62.3 million through 9 months in 2015. And the company is maintaining its capital expenditure guidance in the $115 to $130 million range for the calendar year 2016. And depreciation and amortization expense for the third quarter was $23.1 million compared to $21.2 million for 2015, and year-to-date was $68.4 million compared to $63.8 in 2015. And the company continues to estimate that depreciation and amortization for calendar year 2016 will be between $90 and $100 million. Now, to Neil Boehm for a product and business development update.
Thank you, Kevin. In the third quarter of 2016, there were 21 net new nameplate launches of our inside and outside electronic mirrors and electronic features. The third quarter of 2016 represented the strongest third quarter launch level in the last several years. For example, the net 21 nameplate launches represents a 50% increase over the 2015 third quarter launches, and is approximately five times larger than the third quarter launches of 2013 and 2014. For additional context, the launches in the third quarter were reduced by some minor losses of content on six nameplates, meaning the 21 nameplates were the number of launches net of losses. With this very high level of launch activity in the third quarter, we continue to see strong mix as approximately 40% of the net new launches in the quarter were advanced features. As an update to our integrated toll module system, the company continues to see strong interest from our customers, and we continue to work on the hardware and integration of the product. Over the next few quarters, we'll be working to finalize the initial designs and complete drive testing of prototypes, with the stated goal of having our first confirmed customer toward the end of next year. We continue to see evidence that this product can represent another growth channel for the company over the next several years. As previously announced, Gentex continues to work on the development and launch of full display mirror products for our first four customers. General Motors now has four vehicles in the Cadillac lineup currently offering our full display mirror. We believe this product is very relevant for OEMs, and we continue to see market interest, not only from our initial launch customers, but also from other OEMs. As evidence of this, the company is pleased to announce that we can now confirm that a fifth OEM has sourced Gentex as a supplier of this all-new technology. We continue to believe that we'll see additional program awards for Full Display Mirror in the coming years. Lastly, we'd like to invite our investors and analysts to visit our booth space at CES in January 2017 to see some exciting new product concepts that we'll be showing this year. Please feel free to reach out to Josh or anyone on the team if you're interested in spending some time with us at the show. Now back to Steve Downing for remainder of the year guidance and closing remarks.
Thank you, Neil. Our fourth quarter 2016 estimates are based on October IHS production forecast for the fourth quarter, which is expected to be up 1% versus the fourth quarter of 2015. Based on this, as well as the company's forecasted product mix, we estimate fourth quarter sales will increase between 5 and 10% over the fourth quarter sales of 2015. This brings the 2016 annual revenue estimate to the range of $1.68 to $1.71 billion. Based on actual results for 9 months ended September 30, in addition to currently forecasted sales and product mix, the company is raising its estimated gross profit margin to be between 39.3% and 39.7% for calendar year 2016. This updated guidance represents the company's strong margin performance through 9 months this year, as well as our confidence that we can continue with much of that strong margin performance throughout the remainder of calendar year 16. Based on actual expenses for the first 9 months of the year, the company also estimates that operating expenses will be between $152 and $157 million for calendar year 2016. That completes our prepared comments, and we can now proceed to questions. Thank you.
And if anyone has any questions, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. If you are on a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Once again, that is star 1. We'll take our very first question from Christopher Van Horn with FBR & Company.
Good morning, guys, and congrats on another great quarter.
Thanks, Chris.
Thanks, Chris.
So since you mentioned it, I got to ask, on the fifth OEM, we now have a very, very good docket of OEMs rolling out. I think we know about GM. Can you give us a little more clarity? I'm not sure if you can say yet who the OEMs are, but maybe if you could just tell us when the model year rollout, we're going to see the product on some actual cars.
Sure, yeah. We can't share the OEMs' names yet, but early next year, probably by mid-next year, two more of the OEMs will be disclosed. And then the third one, that's not shipping yet, will be later in the year next year. And then the fifth OEM that we announced, probably looking at a late 18 kind of SOP.
Great. And then on that fifth OEM, since it is a new award, can you give us a sense of the number of programs? Is it multiple vehicle lines, or can you just not say yet?
No, it's going to be a multiple vehicle line OEM, so it's not a single car platform. This OEM is looking at it as a broader execution across several vehicles inside of their lineup.
Okay, great. Can you give us an update on around the tech mix that you're shipping? Is it leaning towards SmartBeam or HomeLink, or is it a combination of all of it? Is anything really standing out for you when you talk about the tech shipments?
Not in this quarter, Chris. It's actually pretty even across all of the various technologies.
Okay, great. And then finally, you know, the gross margins were kind of at a 3-year high here. Is this something that you know? I know you raised the guidance, but was this, you know, was it just the perfect storm of volume and mix and cost savings, or, you know, is it really just a culmination of the things you've been doing over the past 12 months are now coming to fruition and you feel really good about this level?
Yeah, I think you're right on all those fronts. We had contributions from our purchasing cost reductions. Mix was very solid in the quarter. And then, you know, some of the other things weren't going against us. Manufacturing was pretty efficient this quarter, so it was the perfect storm of everything going the right way.
Yeah, I think if you look at that margin performance, it was slightly better than we had anticipated coming into the quarter. And like Kevin mentioned, kind of all the stars aligned. Really, if you look at it, though, it is a combination, and you bring it up very well, Chris, and that is it's kind of a combination of things that we've been working on over the last few years, and those disciplines have all kind of paid out in this quarter. Obviously, it's been increasing over the last 3 years, like you mentioned. But if you go back in the company's history, really you're talking about this margin performance we haven't seen since really the early 2000s.
Okay. Thanks for taking the questions.
Thank you.
We'll take our next question from David Leiker with Baird.
Morning, guys. This is Adam Schmitz on the line for David.
Morning, Adam.
Just kind of going back to the product mix, were there any products or features in particular that contributed to the gross margin improvement?
No, if you look at the mix itself from, you know, was fairly consistent. I mean, obviously, we've always talked about that 10% growth level kind of being a tipping point. So if we can get to that growth level, it helps with margin expansion, which it did this quarter. If you look really, I mean, the mix was fairly consistent versus what we anticipated. But like we talked about in the last couple calls, and Neil mentioned again today, the number of launches have been a little more weighted towards advanced features than what they had been over the last several years. And so whenever that happens, you're going to see a little stronger margin performance than when the mix is weighted towards base mirrors.
Okay. And then on the international shipment growth in the quarter, I guess, were there any markets that you're seeing higher penetration gains than others?
Yeah, we saw decent growth actually in the China market and Europe was fairly strong as well.
Okay. And then lastly, just taking a quick look at 2017, obviously this year you're going to finish gross margins around the 39.5% level. Do you see an opportunity to move higher from here? And then maybe you can just talk about some of the puts and takes to the gross margin level.
No, I'd say really our kind of guidance that we started this year with is probably what we'll guide next year with. So kind of in that 39 to 39.5 range probably would be the typical range you'd see us in. There's a lot of puts and takes, obviously, on January 1, and that's, you know, we're just starting that process of looking at, you know, the backlog, the sales orders, and then kind of extrapolating out both what our OEM contracts look like and hopefully what we'll see out of our purchasing. But, you know, our goal is to, when we hit these margin levels, to find a way to maintain them, and so that's what the company will be focused on going into the end of this year, beginning of next.
Definitely. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
We'll take our next question from Jason Rogers with Great Lakes Review.
Hi, guys.
Good morning.
I'm good. The question on the customer price reductions, that those continue to remain at the same level, and if you think there's a risk that those could increase with automotive production slowing.
Yeah, I think, you know, if you look, though, like you mentioned, I mean, we've been running in this range for the last few years. We feel like, you know, most of our contracts are designed around an endpoint around that, you know, 2 to 2.5% range, and we've been right around that, you know, 2.25 to 2.5% really the last few years. So we feel pretty comfortable that that's the appropriate range. There's obviously in our industry there's always a risk, especially when production starts to drop. You know, pressures can happen to the tier one suppliers. So we're well aware of that. Our job is to find a way to make sure that doesn't overly impact our gross margin performance on a go forward basis. We look at the manufacturing efficiencies and the benefit that we get from the supply community. We feel like we partnered really well with those partners to make sure that we can stabilize margins. So we feel like we have a pretty good shot at making sure we can stabilize these margins into next year as well.
All right. And looking at the new manufacturing facility, is that still on track to be completed at the end of 16, early 17?
Yeah, so we began distribution activities in the middle of the summer, and then they're finishing off the rest of the facility, which lines up with the first part of 2017. You're correct.
Then there'll be a third phase of that that will open into 17 of that same building.
And then finally, it's a small part of the total, obviously, but why were other sales flat in the quarter?
It's really consistent sales in the market. There's not been a whole lot of launches from the aerospace side. You know, there's not many new variants. Timing of certain sales within the prior quarter, you know, led to consistency there. So,
yeah, you're really looking at, I mean, when it comes to the aerospace side, you're looking at the Boeing 787 production volumes. I mean, that's what drives that. So, you know, as they got the kind of peak volumes or higher level volumes last year, really it's been fairly consistent production levels since then.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jason.
And we'll take our next question from Rich Kloss with Wells Fargo Securities.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Thanks, Rich.
Just
handful. So on the quarter here, in terms of a couple of questions here, domestic interior growth, low single digits. What impacted that? Anything specific as it relates to mix? Looks like your I know you don't look at ASP as closely anymore, but from our vantage point, that was up year over year. So was it a function of the exterior mirror growth being strong, helping margin, and then the mix of the domestic interiors being pretty good despite volume growth being, you know, muted? How do we think about that?
Yeah, so I think in the North American market specifically, we had fairly – Detroit 3 was fairly weak, and then we had talked about some losses on a year-over-year basis, specifically to German OEM in the transplant side, so that was weak in the quarter. But otherwise, fairly good, strong product mix like we talked about earlier, Neil mentioned, Steve mentioned already.
On the ASP side, Rich, really what you're looking at there is that outside mirror strength is actually a deterrent to the ASP growth. And so really when you see the ASP start to move like that, it's really a function of the advanced feature launches that Neil referenced in his prepared comments. Those areas are growing, and they're growing very well, and that's what's going to drive ASP up. So, you know, normally when you're looking at an outside mirror, you're looking at a kind of a low 30 or slightly below average price point, which is, you know, pretty far below our corporate ASP. So those sales being strong on OECs really kind of show you the strength on the inside mirror content side that was occurring behind the scenes.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. That's what I was getting at. It seemed like you had a pretty favorable mix on the interior side.
Absolutely.
And then just as we think about fourth quarter here for the gross margin, you had a, you know, pretty strong year to date here and kind of implies a, you know, 39-ish type gross margin for the fourth quarter, at least if you take the midpoint. So you've typically not had that sort of sequential decline from Q3 to Q4. I mean, there's been episodes in the past where you've had some one-offs, but generally speaking, you don't have that sort of decline. And in some cases, it can be up, but just curious on what's underpinning the margin outlook and what you're seeing as it relates to production mix or launches or features, et cetera, et cetera.
Sure. I mean, we're, you know, typically we tend to be a hair conservative going into Q4. We've had a few years, obviously, where the second half of December can vaporize almost overnight. And so when we look at the comments and we see what OEMs are talking about for next quarter and, you know, potentials for, you know, just slightly lower production levels, we tend to look at that very conservatively and try to find a way that we look at it and say, hey, what is probably a very realistic outcome given the risk that exists in the market for Q4 and the potentials for shorter shutdowns to happen towards the end of the year. The other side of that is you're looking at a lot of Tier 1 involvement. So when we talk about OECs and we talk about our HomeLink modules, those all ship through Tier 1s. Typically, they go through inventory adjustment periods. So obviously, when you talk about the potential for outside mirrors and HomeLink shipments to be a little less than they have been in year to date, then that would tend to have a little bit of margin pressure given the margin profile of those product lines.
But just to your point, though, the midpoint of that range is pretty much in line with our year to date gross margin. So I don't know that you would
say it deduce too much. Yeah, exactly.
Okay. All right. Yeah. I mean, so it sounds like you're factoring in the potential adjustments that may occur as the quarter goes on and trying to accommodate that.
Yeah, exactly, especially on the Tier 1 side. That tends to be the biggest risk factor for us at the end of the year.
Okay, all right. And then just on the follow-up on capacity, so as we think about as the capacity rolls out over the course of 17, my recollection is you don't expect really any tangible margin pressure from that, but could you just expand on that?
Sure. I mean, if you look at really the building, like Kevin mentioned earlier, we're, you know, I'd say probably 30% or so occupied in that building right now from a distribution standpoint. By the end of the year, we'll be working on final assembly lines in that that'll take capacity, you know, that'll occupy another 20 or so percent of that building roughly. And so when we look at those numbers, some of those are starting to roll on already, and it hasn't obviously affected margin significantly. And really what the change in that is because we are kind of easing into the pool in terms of use of that building versus historically what you've seen from the company, which is usually a building opens and we need it like overnight to be fully operational. So we're not expecting those type of margin impacts. Secondly, the other factors to look at is just the law of large numbers. So as the company continues to grow, an individual plant has less of a total impact on gross margin performance based on those costs.
Okay. And lastly, our manufacturing teams continue to do more with less. I mean, they're using the same building capacity in some of our places that they've been, you know, their capacity has increased 20-30% without any more footprint.
Yeah, okay, gotcha. And then finally, on the 6-10 for 17, so you made a point in saying production, this factors in the recent production cuts as you look at 17. Steve, how do we think about that range? I mean, what would need to happen to get to 10 versus 6?
Well, really, I mean, if we saw like this year, if we saw production up, you know, in our primary markets up 1-2%, that's obviously helps us significantly because usually those net changes are either additive or, you know, reducing our total sales level. Really, if you look at it, the things that will help and hurt is continued strength in those foreign markets. So, in other words, you mentioned, Rich, the international sales did quite well. As we see those international markets, if they stay strong, that's definitely a help for us. The other one is the rollout of products like FDM, right? If those, you know, if those are stronger than we anticipate, those obviously would tend to help. Really on the negative side, you have the roll-off of a couple of technologies that we've been talking about. So the Mobileye integration, for instance, if that were to be faster than anticipated, it would help. It would drive you towards the bottom end of the range. Those are kind of the big puts and takes to hitting that range.
So do we think of the six within the 6-10, does the midpoint assume 1-2% production growth for your relevant markets?
Yeah, I'd say about 1, really. I mean, when we talk about midpoint, it was really based on an assumption of around 1.
Okay. Okay, great. Thank you. I'll pass it on.
All right. Thanks, Rich.
Now we will take our next question from Ryan Brinkman from J.P. Morgan.
Hey, thanks for taking my question. Maybe one on shipment trends and penetration of the international shipments, which include emerging markets. They were very strong in the quarter. Looks like interior shipments in North America, though, were maybe up only 1% or so, pretty similar to the industry. So the question is really, you know, where do you think we are in terms of, I guess, the maturation of penetration of auto-dimming mirrors in various markets around the world, including in the U.S. and other developed markets relative to emerging markets, where I think the consensus is, you know, it's much earlier days.
Yeah, we talk about this a lot, and it's no secret that North America is our highest penetrated region. Most of the growth there is going to be in B and C segment cars going forward. We have high content on the luxury and SUV market, and so that's why the full display mirror is key for North America going forward. The Detroit 3 on a year-over-year basis was soft for us. We saw strong growth in the transplant OEMs in North America, but it was muted there. And then, we talk about Europe being somewhere in that 40-ish percent, 35-40% penetrated, and then and the Asia regions are more like 10-15 or 15-ish. And so, obviously, we're working hard to grow that market over time, and we saw good performance and like we have consistently for the last several years.
Okay, that's helpful. Thank you. And then just last question is really just a follow-up to, you know, your observation at your analyst day and then our conference thereafter, you know, about the substantial growth opportunity for HomeLink in China over the next number of years. I was just curious if you're starting to see any progress there, roadmap for, you know, further penetrating the market.
Yeah, it's a new market that's still in development, obviously. We have a low-volume production vehicle that's going in there right now, late this year. And then there's a couple more OEMs that start production with HomeLink into the China market at the beginning of 17. Our only constraint is that it's still a new market. A lot of vehicles, it's an easy implementation, but it's the selling and creating the business case for the OEM on why it's a necessity.
Okay, thanks for the call.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
We'll take our next question from John Murphy from Bank of America Merrill Lynch.
Good morning, guys. This is Aileen Smith on for John. Going back to Adam's earlier question, you mentioned that China and Europe were strong in the quarter, which had helped with the international shipment growth. Can you talk about the specific customers that are driving that growth? Is it really just the German luxury OEMs? And are there any specific platform or program launches that you can call out in the quarter?
Nothing that we're going to break out specifically in the region. It was really driven by growth and penetration of, the same OEMs that we're shipping to in all the regions, just further penetration and uptake of our primarily inside mirrors in that region.
So really you're looking at the luxury OEMs in Germany are the primary drivers of that, but we did fairly well with Volkswagen during that time as well. So we continue to see strength with really all of our German OEMs.
Okay, great. And just as a side question, can you remind us what your total revenue or what percent of your total revenue is now attributable to China?
It's between 5 and 6%.
Okay. And then one last question. Your growth in interior mirror, interior mirrors has been outstripping that of exterior mirrors for the past couple quarters. Do you believe that that mix shift can hold going forward, or is the pattern of the past few quarters driven by launches or something else in particular?
Well, I wouldn't look at it as a trend. I mean, if you back up over the, if you back up more than the last few quarters you're referencing and look at the 2 years prior to that, outside mirrors were outpacing inside mirrors. Outside mirrors, in fact, in that 2 year period prior to the quarters you reference, some of those were in between 15 and 20% growth rates. So part of it is just the law of large numbers and the compounding effect of those large growth rates on outside mirrors and then them coming back down to a more normalized level. You know, additionally, what we talked about was one, we had one luxury OEM who was going through a decontenting to try to address some cost concerns. And so we did have some, you know, fairly small, but somehow still changing the numbers, obviously, change based off of that OEM going through those cost pressures and then decontenting some outside mirrors. And so when you see that and you look at those, if those units had stabilized and that hadn't occurred and you look at the growth rates, it would have been right in line with what our kind of historical growth rate and more in line with what those inside mirror growth rates were.
Okay, great. That was very helpful. That's all for me. Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll take our next question from David Whiston from Morningstar.
Morning.
Hey, David.
Margins are really excellent right now, and hopefully that'll continue, but it does get me thinking, in a downturn, can you talk at all about where you would expect operating margins to go?
Well, anytime we get below, you know, as sales drop in that mid-single-digit range, that's when you start to see pressure. If they start to flatten to zero and then they decline, obviously we invest heavily in automation, and so there's some fixed cost base, and we do have some natural hedges built in with the way the variable compensation works with the company. But again, you know, outside of product mix, if we can be in this mid single digit to close to double digit growth rates, we feel like we can manage it in this, the range we've been talking about for a long, long time, 38.5, 39.5, and obviously, you know, when the stars align, we did better this quarter. So you know, we feel like, given our forecast and everything outside of a macro event, we still feel fairly comfortable that margins are going to be in the range that they have been.
Okay, and you talked about the Detroit 3 being weak this quarter. Can you just talk a bit about the general tone you're hearing from both your American OEM customers and Asian and European in terms of, are they mostly optimistic, are they cautiously optimistic, or are they a little more fearful for the next year or so?
Yeah, I would say if you back up, I mean, just to kind of walk through the progression is probably the best way to look at it. So if you backed up a year, I'd say they were all optimistic. Like, both the Detroit 3 and the international guys were looking at the North American market as, you know, a solid growth driver for them. I would say now I'd characterize it more as cautiously optimistic. You start to see a few people that are probably a little more negative than the cautiously optimistic. I think that's about their product lineup and how their vehicles are doing inside the marketplace today. The one thing that's very interesting is trucks and SUVs continue to do really well in this market. And so from a content standpoint, that usually bodes really well for us. So we continue to look at it and say, hey, what is the mix change going to be? One thing that's interesting is when you watch, you know, fuel prices drop like they have been recently or continue to at least be at lower levels, you tend to see the mix move a little bit away from A and B segment and more towards trucks and SUVs, which obviously plays well for us. We do have an expanding book of business, however, in the B and C segment in North America, and that's where a lot of the growth has come from for us over the last, you'd say, 18 months to 2 years. So we feel like we're well positioned. I would say OEMs are a little more cautious than they were a year ago on the North American market, but we continue to see content and features being the key to driving growth rates for this marketplace.
Okay, thanks. And my last question, there's been a lot of talk this year about autonomous vehicles, especially last night with Tesla's announcement. And I was just curious if you could talk a bit about how autonomous can be an opportunity rather than a threat for Gentex.
Sure. Well, if you look at a lot of the technologies we've been working on over the last several years, if you look at the HomeLink play, talk about the integrated toll module, and really what we're working on is a connected car strategy that includes both the HomeLink and includes a transactional vehicle in our toll module product. You know, we believe we have a very unique position in the marketplace to be able to help equip cars and OEMs with the type of technologies they're looking for. If you look at our camera technology, our full display mirror system, all these technologies align well with what OEMs are trying to accomplish inside of the autonomous vehicle space. So it doesn't mean that everyone views autonomous as if you're the algorithm provider for autonomous, that's the only play, and that's clearly not the case. You're looking for comfort and convenience, security, those type of features that can help drive Gentech's growth into the car of the future.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thanks, David.
We have no further questions in queue. I would like to turn the call back over to management for any additional or closing remarks.
No, thank you, everyone, for dialing in and for the good questions. As Neil mentioned, we're happy to host our analysts and investors at CES. Feel free to reach out if you're interested in coming by the booth. And if there are any other questions, let us know. Otherwise, have a great day.
This does conclude today's conference call. Thank you all for your participation. You may now disconnect.